Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
This week's podcast is brought to you by The Great Courses. I love learning. That's why I'm a big fan of The Great Courses. These are video and audio lecture series taught by top professors and experts. And they recently sent me Mysteries of Modern Physics, Time, hosted by physicist Sean Carroll, author and professor from Caltech, and you may remember him from his Story Collider podcast earlier this year about how he turned down jobs from Stephen Hawking. Twice. If you're curious about the science Sean does, this course is perfect for that. He covers what we know about what time is, how the arrow of time works, all that good stuff. You can check this lecture and others out, too, with a special offer. Order from up to 8 of their best-selling courses, including Sean Carroll's, at up to 80% off the original price for a limited time. So order today. Go to thegreatcourses.com/stories. That's thegreatcourses.com/stories.
A science story, huh?
I felt right. I was so happy. I figured it out. It was that golden moment.
Because science was on my side.
Hey everyone, I'm Ben Lilly, and welcome to the Story Collider, where we bring you true personal stories about science. We have shows coming up December 9th in New York City and December 1st and 16th in Boston. StoryCollider.org for more. This week's story is from Adam Rogers, who was recorded in October 2015 at the Rickshaw Stop in San Francisco as part of the Bay Area Science Festival.
At the end of my sophomore year of college, it was clear to almost everyone but me that I was not going to be a scientist. I was destined to be a typist, to write. But I still didn't know that myself. And with the end of the year approaching, I didn't have a job for the summer. And one of my biology professors, a guy named Bruce Telzer, offered me a job. He said that he would have me come work for him in his lab that he had every summer at the Marine Biological Laboratory in Woods Hole on Cape Cod. Yeah, we've heard of it. So I said, yeah, I didn't have the job. He, I think, knew that if I wasn't going to be a scientist, if I was going to be a journalist, which is what it was looking like increasingly, that he wanted me to at least see what a lab was like one time. So I got on a plane. I went to Massachusetts. I got there. He was studying intracellular motility. So he was trying to figure out how things move around inside cells. Turns out there's a network of microtubules. It's like a transit system inside a cell that all of the different organelles inside a cell and the vesicles full of food move around inside. And he was trying to understand how that worked. In order to do that, he had this amazing microscope array that was like 4 feet high from the table, had cameras on top of it, all kinds of different lights and filters, and he had this connected to a video tape recorder. There weren't computers yet. That's how old I am. And he was just hoping that he would catch in the act something landing on a microtubule, and he would be able to film it. Because a device that I guess now is called a laser tweezers, that had not been invented yet. So he couldn't move these microscopic elements of cells around. We had to wait. So I got to the lab, and quickly showed a complete lack of talent at anything in a lab, including dishwashing. I broke labware left and right, which put me on a singular duty in the lab. I got a lot of eye rolls for not being able to figure out any other science except this. I was assigned the responsibility of harvesting gametes. So you know what a gamete is, right? So that's sperm or eggs. The Marine Biological Laboratory is an interesting place because they do some ocean research, but it's not all ocean research. It's a lot of biology. What they're really good at is acquiring research animals. Basically, the entire fishery of the Northeast is theirs to pull in animals that you can study in the lab. So squid, giant optic nerves from squid, or blood from horseshoe crabs, or in our case, gametes from, among other things, surf clams. So surf clams are the clams that are in like Campbell's clam chowder. And it's a wonder that this actually did not put me off clam chowder, but it should have. I learned a few things about clams very quickly. The first thing is, when you take the clam out of the aquarium and put it in your plastic bucket, you want to take it out with the flat side facing you, because they're defensive little critters. They close up their shell when they're scared, and then they if you have them blade side, they squirt water out of the siphon, which then goes onto your shirt and all down your pants. Which is a good, if one of them does that to you, then you know you're going to kill that little fucker first. That guy, he's getting harvested. That little son of a bitch. And you take those, so you take the clams up to the lab and basically you shuck them. It's the same thing as you would see if you're going to eat clams. You shove a knife into the siphon, you twist it, you do it to the other side, you break the muscle that holds the shell closed, it opens. If they're male, there's a big organ like a sac, you sort of cut that open and the sperm looks exactly like you think it does. With the female clams, it's sort of more pinkish and granular. It looks like, you can sort of tell the difference. Sexing clams. I got good at sexing clams. You don't want the one gook to touch the other gook, because when a mommy clam and a daddy clam love each other very much, you know, right? You want to avoid that in the lab because you're trying to collect these. You're trying to harvest the gametes. You're trying to collect the gametes. So I worked with the clams a lot. But that wasn't our only study animal. We were also working with sea urchins, uni, sushi fans, uni. Sea urchins are different. So I'd go down to the collection aquaria, take 20 sea urchins, put them in the bucket, take them upstairs. The first thing that started to happen to me was when I picked them up and I would ask Bruce, is it when you hold the sea urchin, are your fingers supposed to get kind of tingly and numb? Is that supposed to happen? And I would get the eye roll. It turns out that sea urchins have a little bit of venom in their spines, to which I was allergic. Again, very effective lab assistant. So I would wear gloves. I had to wear gloves for the whole time. Harvesting gametes, I'm going to use that euphemism, masturbating sea urchins is a little different. Here's how this works, in case you ever need to do it. Here's how it works. You take the sea urchin, you get a hypodermic needle full of potassium chloride solution. There's a little ring sort of around the top, which is about where a good sushi chef will cut the uni open and serve it to you. Instead of cutting it open and eating it, what you do is you take the hypodermic needle, you plunge it in there about half an inch, you squirt about half a mil of potassium chloride solution, which the ions are in solution in this in the liquid. They go into the body, and they basically fuck up every cell in that sea urchin. It's essentially like administering a liquid electric shock. When sea urchins mate in the ocean, they just sort of squirt their gametes into the water and they kind of float. There's no dating. Sea urchins don't date. They squirt the gametes into the water. If the gametes meet, then you get baby sea urchins. If you have a male not in the water, then the first thing that happens after you hit him with the potassium chloride is all those little spikes on the outside of the sea urchin, they sort of start to wave. They can wave around. It's really creepy. And then this like white ooze comes out of the top of the sea urchin, which then you collect with another hypodermic syringe. If they're female, it's not white. It's purple. It's like this purple jelly-looking stuff. Very quickly, my pants were covered in purple stains, which I had to explain as being like grape jelly to friends, because how do you... What are you going to say at that point? What is that? Just, I don't even want to talk about it. And again, you want to keep these things separate. Now, so the whole point of this was that we're going to use the ova. We're going to use the eggs to get sort of the material out from the inside of the egg, and that's what's going to land on top of a microtubule. We have to get the microtubules. So that's the tail of the sperm. You have to get the tail off the sperm. Here's how that worked. There was a piece of lab equipment called a homogenizer. A homogenizer is a glass cylinder, about that long, with kind of rounded end, and like a ball right there. So you get the picture. It's like a glass cylinder with a rounded end and a ball right there, about three quarters. Are you getting what this looks like? you put the like in solution the male gametes into the bottom of this thing, and then there's like a glass plunger machined, milled to a very tight tolerance. So it just it like grinds right up against the walls of this thing, and you basically kind of do this with it for a little while. This is my life in the lab. With Bruce explaining to me, like, well, you want to just sort of keep doing that, and you'll notice it has a kind of honey-like consistency. And his wife was a researcher at the MBL. They shared a lab together, and his wife heard that. She didn't talk much. I was a huge failure in her eyes, too. But she heard that, and I just heard her snort, and she just turned around and said, oh, Bruce, come on, it's not honey-like, it's snot. Like, so, okay. So I would hit the sea urchins with the potassium chloride, and they'd start to wave like this, and then they would ejaculate. And so I finally asked, so Bruce, what happens to the sea urchin? Like, how do they experience this? Are they, you know, is that, does the waving mean they're having fun, or are they, am I? And he said, I don't know, it's probably killing them, right? And I said, Am I? I don't. The clams. It was obvious. You know, you rip those open. But are they gonna? And he said, "How would you know? I mean, what? They don't have a sophisticated nervous system. They don't. I mean, how would you? What? He was throwing them away. He said, "Listen, I tell you what. At the end of the day, if you're really worried about it, you can put the sea urchins back in your bucket. You can take them down to the beach to the seawall, and you can dump them back in the water. Would that make you feel better?" So dutifully, at the end of every day, I would take these sea urchins, these spent sea urchins, down to the seawall and pour them out into the shallows outside the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution, which is across the street from the MBL, and look into the water and see if they were okay, if they were moving around. I don't think they were okay. In retrospect, I don't think they were. So near the end of the time I was spending in Bruce's lab, despite our best efforts. I can't remember if he did this on purpose to look at it to show me or not, honestly. He had a clam, a male, a sperm and an egg come into contact on a microscope slide. And he knew that it happened. He must have done it on purpose because he knew it happened. He put a cover slide on it, put it into the cool giant microscope thing, turned a bunch of switches and dials, and turned on the screen, and then and centered it on the screen, and we watched the egg get that fissure down the side, and then split into two, and then split into four, and then go to eight. I think we took it to 16, and then he did I do that math right? I did that math right, didn't I? Until he washed the slide, put it in the biologicals, and that was it. And I was awestruck. So I had seen, you know, like the movies about where babies come from and stuff. I was not unfamiliar with how this worked, you know, but I never watched it live. And I was just astonished at how amazing that thing that was happening on the screen was. And he, you know, he saw it in my face too. And I know what this sounds like. So I'll stipulate a few things. First of all, you're not going to find many people more secular than me. Second, I firmly believe in animal research. This is how you do science. Third, I believe women have the right to an abortion. This is not what I'm talking about. But when I was watching that happen on that screen, I was convinced that I was watching a miracle. I don't say that word lightly. I know scientists, good scientists, see that and feel it all the time. It's what makes them good scientists, that they can channel that love for what they are seeing in the universe into their work. But man, watching it completely broke me for lab work. And Bruce looked at me, didn't give me the eye roll, but saw what had happened in my head and said, "Hit the beach. You're done." And I went outside and got a tan. Thank you.
That was Adam Rogers, Adam is an articles editor at Wired, where he edits features about miscellaneous geekery and runs the science desk. His features for the print magazine have included stories about the astrophysics of the movie Interstellar, a fan cruise for Apex nerds, and a mysterious fungus that lives on whiskey fumes. The last one won the 2011 AAAS Kavli Science Journalism Award for magazine writing and led to Roger's New York Times best-selling book, Proof, The Science of Booze. The Story Collider is produced by me, Brian Wecht, Aaron Barker, Ari Daniel, Christine Gentry, Skylar Baer, and Liz Neely. The podcast is produced by Rose Eveleth. Additional help from Brooke Williams, Lena Groger, and Justin D'Ambrosio. The theme music is by Ghost. Special thanks to the Rickshaw Stomp for hosting the show, to Kishore Hari and everyone at the Bay Area Science Festival for incredible help, and to Marine Laboratories for finding so much stuff in salt water. Thanks for listening.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.